Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Wolberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil. We are doing a late recap of the Miami Heat's 107-102 win over the Sacramento Kings. So forgive us for posting this later than we usually do, but it was really late last night. So we decided to just go to sleep and record it in the morning. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm doing okay now that I got a little rest. I just could not stay awake for that last part of the fourth quarter. It's the West Coast road trip. Invariably, it's going to take a lot out of you. Particularly for me, who, you know, I had just come back from covering a game in Orlando, but then I was watching the Heat game. They had built up this huge lead, and all of a sudden the momentum shifted, and like a really bad fan, I wound up not watching the last part of the fourth quarter, which of course is when Miami made their incredible comeback.
Classic Heat fan, leaving early.
That's right.
Miami improves to 11-26 on the season. I guess you can call that an improvement.
It's a win.
It's a win. And you were covering the Magic game. I was actually in Sacramento, because I live around here, covering that game. And I had a chance to talk with some of the players, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But just to start with the recap of the game quickly, Miami seemed like they were going to put this one away pretty soon. They had a 10-point lead in the first quarter. They opened that up to a 12-point lead in the second quarter. And that got to as large as a 19-point lead in the third quarter. And then from there, the Kings went on a 19-0 run. They ended up tying the game right at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And from there, it was a close game for the rest of the night. And Miami found themselves again in another close game situation.
Yeah, injuries had knocked over a lot of the players in our lineup, but they got a few back. Tyler Johnson and James Johnson, who had missed the game the previous night against Phoenix, were available there, so they were able to provide a boost off the bench. They looked particularly good during those first three quarters. Goran Dragic, of course, was carrying, as he does, the scoring load. But then something just changed there. Aaron Aflalo had been hot early on for Sacramento, and he hit a couple of big shots in the third quarter there. And there were some dubious foul calls. I don't know if you saw them, from your perspective there at the arena. I don't know if you saw them as closely, considering all the fans were cheering for Sacramento and everything else. But at least on the broadcast on television, it looked like they were getting the benefit of a lot of ticky-tack calls.
I did notice.
And that really, it really helped to change the momentum a little bit. All of a sudden, they just felt a little bit more comfortable. They would get Miami would be charged an offensive foul on something. Udonis Haslem, who got a lot of playing time because of, Hassan Whiteside's absence, was setting a really good screen on Darren Collison on a Dragic pick. Firmly planted, wasn't moving, got called for an offensive foul. And I thought that was just like the beginning of the end there. I think by that point they had cut the lead down. Sacramento had cut the lead down to about 6 or 8, somewhere around that vicinity. And then they were just able to continue piling on baskets after basket. Miami couldn't hit a shot towards during that 19. I think it was a 19-0 run, right, for Sacramento in order to close the gap there. And then finally Willie Reed was able to put Miami back in the scoring column there. But yeah, it was really touch and go there. And I wasn't sure that Miami could pull it away. And combined with all the exhaustion of the day, it was just too much for me to handle.
Well, you watched the rest of the game this morning and
I did.
Were able to figure it out. But speaking of ticky-tack foul calls, I mean, there was that one technical called against Goran Dragic where I think it was Darren Collison who basically fouled him. And
That's
then
right.
His arm hit Collison in the face, and they called it a tech on Goran Dragic. And that was an absolutely horrendous call. And even before that, there were a few bad calls or no calls against Goran Dragic.
Right.
And I even tweeted it as much as that, I don't know what Dragic did But I don't think NBA officials either. They don't respect them. They don't. I don't want to get too much into this Goran Dragic doesn't get foul calls rabbit hole. But right. It was very noticeable in that game. And when Dragic came out, the Kings went on that run. He was out for most of that run. Dragic was actually a plus 22 for the game.
Right. That's a good call because I had forgotten that, and I guess I just blocked it out because it was so ridiculous. Now, was Collison assessed a personal foul on Dragic?
No.
Okay, so he didn't get charged with anything because I thought that's what had happened was that at first it looked like Collison fouled Dragic as he wanted to do. Then Dragic kind of threw the arm a little bit as he was driving towards the rim, and I think that's why he was assessed a technical because it looked like a little bit, you know, after the play call or after the foul call. So I had assumed that that's what it was. And then, of course, you didn't mention this, but Collison throwing his head back in really artistic fashion. I mean, like, Dragic grazed his chin at the end of the play and Collison just fell backwards completely. Like a sniper shot had rung out from the media loge there. I don't know what happened, but it was pretty impressive. And I guess if that was the moment, the turn in the momentum there, that was a big play. And Dragic was keeping Miami's offense aloft for most of the game there. And once he got taken out, as you pointed out, that's when Sacramento was able to make their comeback. So it was a really interesting game.
And as you mentioned, Willie Reed was able to end that run with a little bit of a layup. And the game went back and forth for most of the game until Tyler Johnson was able to come up big. And I want to talk about that in a second. But first of all, like, this was one of those wins that the Heat needed. You know, it looked like it was going to be a blowout for those first three quarters, but it ended up being another. I mean, they've had these really bad stretches all for the last three or four games that's just basically sunk them in these games. And it looked like for a second there that this was going to be a blowout and they weren't going to have a bad stretch. And of course, you know, they just waited a little bit longer for that bad stretch towards the, like, right, you know, in between the third and fourth quarter was where that stretch was. And they found themselves again in another close game, but they were able to pull this one out. And Eric Spoelstra actually talked about that after the game. So here's that.
Well, we got pushed and we felt all the emotions of building a 19-point lead, giving it up, and then having to execute again. And we've been talking about this now for a while, but in particular on this trip, that we really want to take the next step forward in these quote-unquote clutch games, close games down stretch, and to be able to defend better, more disciplined, make plays, which you saw when it came down to it. We end up getting a tremendous block shot from Tyler, tracking down. Looked like that would have been a real big momentum-changing play. We end up scoring after that. A couple big rebounds by Rodney. Tyler had a big rebound. And then finally some execution down the stretch. And not counting the one where Tyler made the three-point play. But some ones before that, it was better. But I think it's the most important thing is going through all the motions again, staying connected, persevering, and then finding a way to get over the hump. It's just great for our team to go through scenarios like this tonight.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
And you hear Eric Spoelstra talk about Tyler Johnson's big plays at the end there. In the last 50 seconds, Tyler Johnson scored 5 points, had a block, and a steal. I mean, he was clutch at the end of that game.
Absolutely. The block in particular was great after they had stolen the ball from Dragic. I believe it was Collison racing down court for the layup. It looked like he was going to be able to get past anybody, and he certainly did. But Tyler was able to close the gap, hung with him in the air as Collison was attempting the layup, and was able to use his incredible length in order to reach over and block the shot. Clean block, no foul call. Everybody thought there was an obvious call there, especially in the Kings arena. A lot of players were complaining for a foul call, but it was a good clean block. And then offensively, he had the ball in his hand. The play looked like it was a broken one, and rewatching it today, it looked like it was a little bit of a broken play. but he was just able to drive against a fairly good defender in Matt Barnes, hang in the air, draw the foul, and then on his way down, just throw up an impossible shot that I don't think he thought he was going to make that shot. In fact, they caught him later on kind of smiling like, holy cow, I got away with a hell of a shot on that one, because he did not expect to make that. But it was necessary, and it really helped seal, I think, the victory for Miami, because from that point, I don't think the Kings got another bucket.
No, and after the game in the locker room, Tyler Johnson basically did the same thing and just said, I was just trying to make a play for my team.
Right.
Whatever that means. I love the vague terminology. But, yeah, I mean, it was certainly a broken play, just to go back into that, because it was so interesting. I mean, he loses his dribble a couple times. That play, they gave Tyler Johnson the ball in the first place. Spoelstra obviously thought that he was the guy to go to. They give him the ball. He loses the dribble once.
Right.
He loses the dribble twice. And he doesn't pass it away. And I was kind of scratching my head there. I'm like, dude, like, clearly you're screwing, like, you can't dribble right now for this possession. Pass the ball. Like, give it to somebody else who can. But he was like, hell no, I'm doing this. And he dribbled right into the middle of the floor, which, as a reminder, the last couple possessions there, Tyler Johnson and Goran Dragic each dribbled it to the middle of the floor, almost to that exact point, and turn the ball over. So he does it again. So there's like a million things on this play that are screaming, like, what are you doing? And he's doing them. And so he dribbles it back to the middle of the floor, puts the shot up from his shoulder, just kind of pushes it, like you said, had no business going in. Otherwise, probably would have just gotten free throws, but he turns into a three-point play because the ball goes in and is essentially the game-winning shot of the game. He has that huge block at the other end. He gets a steal at the end, which was kind of garbage time, but counts. I mean, these were all in the last 50 seconds. It was just incredibly clutch by him. And, he wasn't the only guy. I thought Ronnie Magruder also had a really strong last couple of minutes. I mean, this guy is, it seems like his box score for the game, for example, 1 of 5, over 3 from 3-point range, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, plus 7, 3 points. Like, I feel like that's his line for basically every game in one way or another. But he had 2 really big rebounds at the end of the game that helped end some Sacramento possessions, and he was able to put the ball on the floor a little bit and create some stuff for his teammates. I liked his game, even though he didn't make a lot of shots.
Yeah, and the Kings broadcast team, including Doug Christie. I did not know that he was on the Kings broadcast team, by the way. Did you see him in person? Yeah, did you see him there while you were in the arena?
I've never seen him there.
Yeah, so he kept raving about Magruder, like, you know, obviously the kind of yeoman-like work that he does, his commitment on defense, and obviously you're not going to see his impact on the stat line as you just rattled off those numbers there. I mean, he's not necessarily going to put up a big scoring night or anything like that, but he does do a lot of little things that do help Miami win, and that it doesn't always translate into a victory for the team, but there are so many different issues going on. If there's one thing to say about this season, with the number of injuries and everything else and the inconsistency, just the fact that we were able to mine a young player like Magruder and help him continue to develop and take his game to the next level, Miami's done something really, really different there. So many other teams struggle to find young players on the cheap like this. They're investing all their money in high-quality draft picks or high draft picks that don't necessarily turn into productive NBA players. And you get a guy like this who's on the cheap, who was, you know, brought up through their D League system, and has been rewarded for the kind of faith that Miami showed in them, and it's been a great find for the team this season.
Speaking of young players and developing them, Justice Winslow out for the season, or expected to miss the rest of the season. He's going to need surgery on a torn labrum, a labrum, which I found out is in the shoulder. I don't know. I think it's a ligament. I don't know. In the shoulder. So that's his right shoulder and his wrist that have been injured this season. And his shooting percentages certainly reflect that. And basically the Heat are going to shut him down for the rest of the year. But the negative part of that is obviously, like, okay, this season was really supposed to... All right, winning games. Okay, they beat the Sacramento Kings. Great. That's not going to happen a whole lot as far as winning games. So the season really is about developing young guys. And now Winslow's not going to have that opportunity. So that really hurts.
Yeah, I mean, a torn labrum, it's the injury that they used to refer to, particularly with pitchers in Major League Baseball, you know, a rotator cuff or something along those lines. It's basically a small muscle in the back area. I've actually got a torn labrum in my left shoulder, but I don't necessarily need to play at a high level in the NBA.
Did you come back as a better three-point shooter?
You know, that's always been the strength of my game, and being that it's my left hand, it's not necessarily ever been a factor, but my defense is probably a little bit off now, and I'm not necessarily going to be the same kind of lockdown defender that Justice Winslow is. But you know, it's just such a shame, because you wanted to see this year be one of significant growth for him, and though there were a couple flashes here and there, obviously, the offense, I think, regressed even a little bit. The shot making hasn't been a problem. We wanted to see him more in a playmaking role. And he did get the opportunity, but that wasn't necessarily something that we saw consistently. And so now with the injury, you know, you wonder how much it's going to continue to hamper his development. And, you know, to an even more extreme point, you know, we had thought that maybe Winslow might be included in any kind of trade talks or packages if they were looking to acquire a bigger name player. That's obviously not going to happen now. So I don't know what's going to expect out of Winslow. You know, is he going to be able to recover from this and continue to develop along the same path? Is he going to be a step slower? Is he still part of Miami's future? And I think that's the question that both you and I and the team needs to answer.
And like you said, they're not going to really have much of a sample to base that on, right? It's going to be his rookie year and a couple of games from this season. I mean, he missed 16 straight games with that wrist injury. I mean, this guy's whole year has been on and off. And I think, you know, you don't want to hurt his trade value if that's a goal or if that's even something on Miami's mind right now, because he's been shooting so poorly.
Right.
It makes sense. But Eric Spoelstra said before the game, when he was kind of talking to the reporters about the injury, and he said, I was on the plane with Justice, and he mentioned how his shoulder popped out, but he popped it right back in, and I immediately got a pit in my stomach, because I guess Spoelstra's been around long enough to know exactly what that means. They sent him to a hospital, got the first opinion, said it was a torn labrum, sent him to a second hospital for a second opinion. They said it was a torn labrum, and they're like, you know what, shut it down, you're getting surgery, out for the year. And that was basically it. And what this means now for the Heat is that Josh Richardson probably gets that starting job at the small forward, nominal small forward spot, with Mick Roberts out for, you know, the time being, and Winslow out for the rest of the year. It's going to be Luke Babbitt starting at power forward. I mean, the injuries just keep piling up, and Winslow was so versatile that he was able to help mask a lot of those things, as much as he was struggling this year, and he was. Like, he was able to mask some of those things just with his general versatility and the ability to play multiple positions.
Right.
And they don't have that anymore, so it's just going to be a lot more of just kind of trying to piecemeal starting lineups together. But the Heat had 11 players in this game, which was, like, the most they've had in a very long time, and Spoelstra actually joked after the game that he looked down the end of his bench, and he was like, wow, I have options. Usually I just play the guys until they get tired, until the next guy to go in. Now I have, like, decisions to make. So,
well, you were able to ask Goran Dragic about that, and he pointed out that that was a big part of why Miami was able to pull out the victory, right? That the fact that they had, well, not necessarily their full squad, but at least a much deeper bench than they had the previous night against Phoenix.
I mean, Dragic was able to play 30 minutes, you know, and some of that was because he was taken out for a while there, but he played 30 minutes. Josh Richardson basically handled most of the load there with 37 minutes, but otherwise nobody played more than 30 minutes, which was really nice for this team.
Udonis Haslem, I feel like I should point out his contribution there, because, you know, I knew he was going to get some playing time, particularly when you've got such a big lineup with DeMarcus Cousins and Costa Kufos and Willie Cauley-Stein. So you've got three players that could play center for, you know, arguably any amount of time there. And so you were going to have to get somebody off the bench there. And there really weren't any other options other than James Johnson playing the five occasionally. You know, and Willie Reed was starting. He got, 23 minutes last night. Yeah. But Haslem wasn't far behind. He played 18 minutes. And mostly he was just made an impact defensively, especially in the clutch situation there. I think he guarded Cousins along the perimeter when he drove to the hoop. He was able to harass him just enough where he put up a pretty bad shot and it didn't fall through. And I think he made a real difference there. Like, we've seen this over the years that he's been willing, even when his playing time is significantly limited, he still goes in there and does a good job. I mean, of course, we remember years ago how he was our designated Hibbert stopper, and that's always been a big plus of his, you know, moving his feet, being able to use his body, even though he's, you know, arguably 50 or 70 pounds lighter than Cousins. He uses his weight well. He's got strong, he's got strong legs, and he uses leverage against him. He knows how to maintain, his strength and his body leverage to at least keep a player from getting a comfortable scoring position.
He's got the greatest ass in Heat history. Like, he does not.
I don't know how to come back from that one, Wes. You totally threw me off.
He's got the greatest ass in Heat history. He doesn't get boxed out by anybody. I thought early on in the game, I don't think Willie Reed necessarily knew how to handle DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins, first of all, looks twice the size of Willie Reed, which is crazy because Willie Reed is a big dude. DeMarcus Cousins is that much larger. And he bullied him around. I don't think Willie Reed knew how to handle him. And Haslam's like, I know how to handle him. I got the greatest ass in Heat history. And he goes in there and he puts it into DeMarcus Cousins, and Cousins can't move him. Haslam is so good at boxing out, and that's such like an underrated skill, even though it's like the first thing you learn in basketball when you're growing up, but it's like a thing we don't even think about anymore, but he's so good at it. Like, we often think of boxing out as either you do it or you don't do it. But there's different levels of boxing out. Like, some people are elite at boxing out, and some people who do it, they genuinely try but are not good at it. Haslam tries really hard, and he's really good at it. Like, he knows how to position guys. He knows how to pin them against, a hip or, force them towards a baseline, away from, to give him a weird angle for a rebound. Like, he gets all of that. And that really, I thought, had an effect on DeMarcus Cousins. Cousins, for the game, 4 of 15, had just 6 rebounds, 0 offensive rebounds, which is a statement to Haslam, who ended up being on Cousins for a lot of the game. Cousins only had 13 points. This is the second leading scorer in the NBA. A lot of people, I don't know, realize that. But this is the guy scoring with James Harden and Russell Westbrook, and they held him to 13 points.
Yeah, I mean, that's impressive. And maybe some of those were bad shots from Cousins. He did take 4 three-pointers, but those are shots he can make.
Those are shots he makes, absolutely.
Yeah, a 38% clip there. And it's ridiculous. I mean, Cousins is uber-talented, and you can go on about him all day. But yeah, Haslam, the way he shifts his weight, gets down low to keep a player from skying over him for the rebound. At one point, I can't remember what quarter it was. I want to say it was the third quarter, but Cousins got frustrated, got tangled up with Haslam, and Haslam kept locking his arms but walking away at the same time, as if to say, "No, this ain't me. I'm not doing anything. This is just him, flailing his limbs around." And no foul call was made. That was great. That was really a veteran savvy move there. So a really impressive display from him. I want to ask you about Cousins, to be honest with you, because you saw him in person, and obviously that's a name that gets included a lot with trade talk. What did you see in him up close that maybe might scare off some Heat fans or make them more interested in acquiring a guy like him?
Like, in general this season, as I've covered him?
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, you've seen him up close now a few handful of times against the Heat. I mean, was there any kind of issue there that really stood out to you or anything like that?
So there's two questions there. Where's the issue, and what would be like enticing? So, and that's really like, Cousins is such a polarizing player. Those are two very separate things. The issues are certainly that the dude just throws his mouthpiece a lot. And I don't know if he obviously has those concerns, and I think he needs to be bracketed by a more mature alpha dog player. Like, he can't. I don't think DeMarcus Cousins is capable of being the alpha dog on a team. He is so loud and, polarizing, and certainly not shy to express himself. But that's not...
Oh, not at all.
But that's not... Like, he's not shy to call out teammates, for example. But...
And he doesn't stop talking.
He doesn't stop talking. But
I noticed that when one game I covered him this season in Orlando, he does not stop. Like, he's always jawing, and to nobody in particular. He's just talking.
Which is fine. That's good. And we've seen players like that, like Kevin Garnett, for example. I think Kevin Garnett going to Boston when he did, and kind of being put in place by Ray Allen and Paul Pierce, other alphas, really helped him. And I think Cousins would benefit from something similar. But I don't know. Like, I don't see him as being a leader. Like, he's not afraid to call out guys, but that's not the same as leadership. He's not a leader. He's not somebody that could walk into a locker room and change the way that locker room interacts with each other. Like, we've heard about Dwayne Wade going to Chicago and immediately affecting that locker room. Like, he doesn't have that, I don't think, or hasn't developed that at least. And it's really, I don't want to put too much fault on him because he's in Sacramento. Like, he's got a different coach every year and he's got a whole bunch of different teammates. Like, he's never had that. So I don't know that that's his fault, but he doesn't have that. The things that are obviously enticing is he is a player I think you can win a championship with. I just think he's so ridiculously skilled. Like, even the Heat, who have Hassan Whiteside, doesn't even compare to DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, he's playing the four this year. He's like, I think if he lost maybe 20 more pounds, he could be prime Blake Griffin, but with a three-point shot. And I think
it's not like he's overweight, though. I mean, you know, I don't think so.
No,
he's
but just if really want, small. Yeah, but if you wanted to play the four, he would probably have to lose a little bit more. He could probably slim down a little bit, but he's not fat. He's not overweight. Like, he's not out of shape. But he's just so ridiculously skilled. So if you put him in his traits with a real alpha dog, I think you have something there, and I think that's why a lot of people look at like a John Wall partnership as something that would be strong. I don't know if Wall is necessarily the alpha dog he needs because he doesn't have as much championship experience at all, but I don't know. Those are my two takeaways, is that it won't be easy, but his more so than – it's not something that like the Heat are dealing with that with Whiteside already, but this guy is probably 10 times as talented as Whiteside.
It's an interesting observation. I don't think anybody's discussed that, because especially not from the Miami Heat fan perspective. Everybody sees a big name, and that's obviously something that Riley's done in the past, and whatever temperamental issues he may have or on-court behavioral problems or anything like that, that doesn't matter to Pat Riley and the Heat organization. I think they'll be willing to work through that. Look, I mean, we can look back to Alonzo Mourning. He was a surly bastard too when he was in Charlotte, but that didn't stop Riley from getting him because he likes guys with that kind of an edge. So
my overall like feeling from DeMarcus and just like the little bits that I've dealt with him this season is that I think he's craving that kind of structure. I will say that. I really do genuinely believe he cares about winning more than anything. I think he cares about winning more than his stats. I think he really does. He's in a much better mood when the team wins, and when he loses, you don't want to even talk to him. Like, I don't want to go in the locker room. I don't want to go in the Kings locker room and lose. I didn't go in the locker room after the game last night. I didn't. I went into the Heat's locker room, and then I left. I didn't even bother with the Sacramento Kings locker room. But I think he genuinely cares about winning, and I think he is, and I don't know if he knows this, but I think he's craving that structure in place, like that he just, and a consistency that he hasn't had in Sacramento. I think he's craving that.
That's interesting. I mean, yeah, I think he's a hell of a player. But yeah, it's a good point about the if you bring in somebody like him, it would have to be a secondary move to having signed a free agent, you know, this summer as a lead dog, or you know, somebody like that, somebody who's going to control the temper in the locker room and be able to tell him, hey, you got to keep it down a notch. But I don't know that there are many guys in the league who even fit that category anymore.
Well, hypothetically, okay, since we've started this conversation, then what would it take to get DeMarcus Cousins without trading the draft pick that the Heat have? Because I don't know if you can get that free agent. Like, Curry is not leaving, probably. I mean, who knows? Anything could happen. But let's say he's not. You can't bet on it. Blake Griffin, I don't see him as that type of locker room presence. Chris Paul, but we already know the way that Pat Riley is viewed by the Banana Boat crew, probably not happening. So I don't know who that leaves. Like, Gordon Hayward is like a tertiary move in anything like that, but you'd have to trade. And I look at a guy like Carmelo Anthony, who I've written about. I think he has an underestimated locker room presence. I really do.
Okay.
And if the Heat get a top five pick and they select, maybe they have the fourth, if they get the first or second pick, right, maybe they're able to get Markelle Fultz and they say, okay, this is the guy we're going to build around. But if they get the fourth or fifth pick and say, okay, I don't, and Riley decides that he doesn't see a real franchise player there and maybe sees a move to get DeMarcus Cousins, taking a player at four or five and then trading that player to the Knicks, who might be willing to rebuild, for Carmelo Anthony, if they've decided that they want to move on from that and rebuild around Porzingis. I think you could take Carmelo Anthony, trade Goran Dragic, Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, you know, whoever it takes to get DeMarcus Cousins, and then that might work, where you have Carmelo Anthony and DeMarcus Cousins, and then you go sign another free agent, a Gordon Hayward, something like that, where, okay, now Cousins has some real talent around him, he's got a veteran guy like Carmelo Anthony next to him, and in a locker room with a structure like Miami's, that could work. I don't know. I just hypothetical spitballing here, but since you brought it up.
No, it's an interesting one. I mean, I just feel like he's been such a popular name as far as trade talks are concerned, and if you're willing to move a guy like Whiteside and things of that sort, although, you know, obviously he can play the four, and as he did last night, it's worth kind of examining a little bit further. And I'm glad
I will say that a lot of Heat fans are saying, what would it, Whiteside and something else swap for Cousins? If the Kings trade Cousins, they're not looking for a guy like Whiteside.
Right.
It really defeats the purpose of moving a guy like Cousins. Like, the reason they move a guy like Cousins is because they feel like they need to have a more mature locker room and maybe put some more consistency in place there or something like that. Or also, they have a ton of centers. They have six centers on that roster. They're not going to get Whiteside when they also have, like, Kosta Kufos and Willie Cauley-Stein, which they still don't know much about. And I think that for Heat fans getting on that trade machine right now, do Goran Dragic, because that's a player that the Kings would want, not Hassan Whiteside. Anyway, let's see. Just some stuff to wrap this thing up. Dion Waiters played for the first time in forever, so that was great.
Yes, he did.
10 minutes, 4 points on 2 of 4 shooting, 6 or 7 and 1 calls, 3 turnovers. His minutes are going to be managed closely for the next few games by Eric Spoelstra, but I don't know. I thought it was nice to see him back there.
Oh, for sure.
He's,
I mean,
so
look,
wildly entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. Obviously, he was aggressive. He made a couple of moves here and there that were necessary at the time, and that's what you're going to get from him. You look, obviously, there's going to be some really head scratching plays there, and there were a couple passes where you could see his timing was way off after having not played for over a month. Right? It seems like that much, at least. Yeah, so, you know, he's going to take some time before he gets back to normal, but even his normal isn't particularly efficient, and that's fine. That's why we live Dion. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he was fantastic last night.
And we got to mention his son Whiteside was out with a right eye issue, and he will be returning to the Heat. More likely than not, he'll be there for the Lakers game Friday night. And, yeah, I think that... Oh, we did want to talk about the NBA All-Star Game. First Returns has Whiteside in ninth. So, I mean, these first returns are a little wacky. Dwayne Wade right now is in second for guards, right?
Yes.
And Zaza Pachulia has an insane amount of votes in the Western Conference. So these first returns are very baseline. But now is the time to, if you want to vote Whiteside into the All-Star Game, Heat fans, start tweeting his name with hashtag NBA vote to get him in there, because he needs the votes.
Yeah, it's starting to look a lot less likely that he'll get an All-Star selection.
I do. It is 50% fans, 50% in this
players and coaches. Yeah.
50% split between players and coaches. I wonder how much respect Whiteside will get from players and coaches. His stats are so insane. I don't know. Like, I think he deserves an All-Star bid this year, but I don't want to get too much into this because I'm sure we'll have more opportunities to talk about it, and we're running out of time here. But. Heat fans, start tweeting his name if you want him in there. So,
yeah.
All right. Anything else from the game? Not much, right?
No, I think we broke it down pretty well. I think it was a good win. You know, there haven't been many of those. Obviously, like you pointed out, this just their 11th win all season. But good comeback. You know, it's a team like the Kings. You can always chalk up. You know, they were able to beat a bad team, but they were without Rudy Gay. But at the same time, Sacramento's in competition for the 8th playoff spot in the Western Conference. So any win's a good one at this point, and hopefully it's the start of some positive momentum for Miami.
The Heat play the Lakers at 10:30 Eastern time Friday night. This will be our last podcast for the week, and then we will be back Monday with a mailbag. Thank you guys for listening. Get in touch with the show at Locked On Heat on Twitter or by email, where you can send us those mailbag questions, send us comments or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thanks for listening. And be sure to hit that subscribe button on whatever you use to listen to podcasts. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Absolutely, Wes.
Hey again, Wes here. So one of the reasons our boss, David Locke, started the Locked On Podcast Network is because podcasts are hot. I mean, of course they are. You're listening to one right now. And if your company is looking to reach listeners as awesome as you are, you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Heat is listened to by 95% men, 74% of which are between the ages of 18 and 44. According to a recent study, podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with a sponsor than within any other media outlet. Plus, our rates are reasonable, or you can decide that for yourself. Just email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com to find out more about sponsoring Locked On Heat and engaging the audience you want to reach.